Okay, my role is to sum up what went on in the different workshops based on what the rapporteurs told me. So I'm just going to do a summary and try to make sure that what everyone said was included. And then David will do sort of more, he'd take it broader and try and raise some questions from it and so on. So it seems in the morning, the organizers have provided three questions along which to organize the discussion, but it looks like in most of the workshops, those questions weren't sort of discussed in the format that they were set out. But I found that, in fact, the discussions did touch upon those questions, and so I've used those questions to help me organize what came out of the morning workshops. So the first question was, how useful is the North-South distinction in helping us understand capitalist globalization and helping us build left internationalism and solidarity? And so the sort of things that came out were that many of these concepts are still very academic and that we still need to work to define colonialism, capitalism, globalization, imperialism, etc., in ways that they're popularly accessible. In order to really build movements around them. A lot of people, there seemed to be a lot of feeling that, in fact, the North-South distinction was not entirely useful and that it could lead to unfortunate stereotypes, so that the South is always associated with certain stereotypes of exoticism, poverty, etc., and then the North always with development, industrialization, and so on. And so they're very polarized distinctions. They don't permit crossovers. And also they lead you to forget that for people, especially for a lot of immigrants from the South, from immigrants of color in a place like Toronto, these are not in fact abstract or reified categories. They're actually lived experiences where people move back and forth between these two areas. And so people, there seemed to be some sense in which these weren't considered useful categories to organize, but then there was no agreement as to what other categories or discourses could replace them. And so ideas like colonialism were thrown up, imperialism, and also terms like exploiter and exploited. But again, there's no consensus as to how you would talk about these differences without using the category of North and South. The second set of questions was how are the actions in the northern and southern sites of struggle being linked, and how can solidarity be strengthened in the future? And this seemed to be the question that took up the most time in all the workshops, or most of the discussion focused on this. One important and interesting thing that came out was the question of nationalism and how you can understand nationalism in the process of building an internationalist movement. And so there was the suggestions that anti-colonial third world movements must be understood as being progressive and as having that a sort of progressive role to play, and that therefore they should be supported by international solidarity movements. But then others argued that the nation state is not necessarily an emancipatory site, and that in fact even within anti-colonial movements there were other kinds of oppression present, such as racism or sexism. And plus even these anti-colonial movements that may have begun, that may have had an initial progressive role, should be understood chronologically or temporally, and what may have started as a progressive movement may have by now degenerated into something quite reactionary. So there was a lot of debate in how you can understand nationalism, and obviously how you can contrast sort of northern nationalism, which tends to become or often leads to fascism or to imperialism, versus sort of anti-colonial or the nationalist movements of the oppressed, which still have a potentially progressive role to play. The other major discussion, major set of ideas that came out around this question was the question of scale. Where should one's struggles be focused? Should they be at the local level, the national level, the international level? What are the links between these different levels? One point that was made was that there's really no international struggle. There isn't really the possibility of an international struggle. What there is are different national struggles, and the possibility of building networks between them at this point. So you can't really talk about an international struggle around common issues. But on the other hand, it was pointed out that as capital globalizes and as people have common employers in different countries, that in fact there has to be a movement that allows people to work against a common employer, like a company that's based in 3 or 4 different countries. It was pointed out that you can't see these different levels as dichotomies. You can't sort of counterpose local to international or to national. And it would depend very much on the particular struggle that you're engaged in. And that especially, it's important to think of cities like Toronto as struggles in Toronto as being, while they're local, they're also located within a very specific history of imperialism, of both British imperialism in North America and also Toronto's location as a site of immigration, continued immigration, linking it to the South, and so that a lot of work in a city like Toronto may actually have internationalist implications, even if it is locally oriented. And also it was pointed out that local struggles around concrete issues like the privatization of water or homelessness have the advantage of bringing the struggle home and also are important because they develop the democratic character, democratic abilities of people to actually engage at a local level, which can then become useful building blocks for international movements. So even discussions like we're having today have that useful character of being spaces where we can engage with each other in a democratic fashion. What's important, though, when you're engaging in a local struggle is to try and be able to link it or to name its international and its global context. And for instance, the Zapatistas were enormously successful in building international solidarity because they were able to name and to locate their local struggles within the larger neoliberal context. They were able to link it to neoliberalism. And again, there was some discussion around the relationship between sort of work in local areas versus mass mobilizations, and some people felt that mass mobilizations were only possible because of successful local organizing, and the mass mobilizations built on that. But on the other hand, what mass actions can do is politicize people who may not have been engaged locally and also allow people a chance to confront the whole system rather than just its local manifestations. In terms of how to further international solidarity, there seemed to be general consensus that had to be done, that there wasn't enough of that right now, and that was definitely a challenge. But again, how one would do it, there seemed to be a number of different approaches. A lot of people took up Jaggi Singh's idea that it's important to link the grassroots and not just link the NGO or union leadership. And others thought that what Judith Marshall had talked about, which is the idea of trade union exchanges, is again another important strategy, so long as they're not paternalistic in approach. And again, these links have to be mutual so that there's learning going on in both directions and that there's learning from the southern movements and not just a kind of paternalistic teaching by northern trade unionists and so on in the south. The third broad question was how can different material circumstances in the north and south, as well as differences of culture, race, etc., affect international solidarity, and how can they be overcome? And so I'm not sure that this question was actually taken up directly, but it seems like people did agree that, or people didn't agree as to how they actually saw what the central issue was. So some people identified class as the sort of root of all oppressions, and others talked about race and gender. So there wasn't agreement as to how you would actually strategize in the face of all these different forms of exclusion and oppression. Although there was also some views about intersecting oppressions and having to work with them jointly. an important point was made, which is that some kinds of identity-based struggles, for instance, around race or gender, may be necessarily national in scale, but this doesn't necessarily put them in competition with anti-globalization movements. So you can actually work together, even if you're working at different scales, identity-based movements being national, anti-globalization being international. The role of privilege was something that came up in this context. And the question being, should people who want to get engaged in an anti-capitalist or anti-globalization movement aim to shed what privilege they have in order to be involved, or should they use what privilege they have to further the movement? I always felt that wealth was not the only form of privilege. There are other things like race and gender. And it was important to recognize, this is a point that came up again and again, that you require a relative amount of privilege to be able to participate in some of these mass actions, just in terms of the money to travel to them, the free time to actually be able to go there. And so it's important to recognize who gets to go to these mass actions. And again, making North-South links has to keep in mind the role of possible privilege and therefore avoid being paternalistic, learn from Southern struggles, and so on. Okay, so that's sort of the morning workshops. with regard to the ones in the afternoon, they're all on different themes, so it's very hard to actually kind of bring them together. So I'm just going to... There were four or five different workshops. Everyone had two or three things to report, and I'll just read them out. Okay. So the first set of workshops in the afternoon was, I think, it was a couple of different ones collapsed. There was one on militarization, on imperialism, and on, I think, linking anti-globalization struggles. That was sort of all in one workshop. And the main things that came out of here as possible strategies, there seemed to be two main strategies identified. One was as a strategy to sort of work to confront multilateral or supranational institutions such as the World Bank and the WTO, and the strategies like working to defund these institutions, shut them down, etc., was one kind of strategy that was talked about with response to with respect to globalization. And on the other hand, there were those who stressed the continuing importance of national struggles, and that ultimately globalization, neoliberalism, and so on would have to be addressed through national struggles. The role of the nation state was still very important to interrogate because of its increased militarization, its policing role, and so on. Another sort of thing that was flagged here was the idea of democracy, that being tied to the nation state again, which is that neoliberalism has increasingly insulated states from popular movements, and so the fight also has to be around democracy and somehow calling for the state to re-engage in providing welfare and so on, and not actually give up its responsibilities on those fronts. Someone in this workshop also talked about the need to decolonize the mind, so that it's not just a question of attacking multilateral institutions or the nation state, but also addressing sort of how people would go about doing this. And something that came out of this, which was quite important, was that although the idea of imperialism seems almost dead in the North, it's not used as an organizing ideology. It's not really used as, or even understood to have any kind of political significance. It's still very much alive in the South. That's how a lot of people active in the South organize their politics. And so that very difference in how a framing concept like imperialism is understood is a sort of points to the divisions in a sense between North and South and has to be bridged. Okay, the second workshop was on building labor solidarity north and south. And it looks like here mostly there were strategies discussed as to how you can build this labor solidarity. And so one, and there were strategies like supporting strikes, boycotts, anti-sweatshops campaigns, getting rid of NAFTA and WTO. And then basically challenging trade union labor and labor passivity here, making worker-to-worker links, talking about international solidarity, not about charity, taking the cue from southern countries, and also providing the need for good analyses of international issues like Plan Colombia or the Third World Debt. And here there was a lot of debate about around such things as the social clause, and whether that was the way to go to actually ensure fairer labor environmental standards across the world, whether in fact incorporating a social environmental clause into multilateral trade agreements was the way to go, and there's no agreement about this as a strategy. I think that was this particular workshop. And then there was one called, I think it's called Hegemony and Resistance to Capitalist Culture, something to that effect.
Resistance to
hegemonic capitalist culture. And so this sounds like it was a really interesting workshop, but I'm not sure that I'll actually do justice to what was said there because it sounds quite complicated as well. Anyway, there's a sort of discussion around what capitalist culture has come to mean. And so it's come to mean things like a consumer culture, the commodification of even the most basic resources like water and electricity. And the idea that citizens are clients, so that the government is providing client services rather than any notion of rights or citizenship. And it's, in terms of the aesthetics of this culture, essentially what it's doing is reproducing capitalism and sustaining it. And most people have become sort of passive receptacles of culture, rather than producers or actively engaged in producing culture in any way. And one of the things that came up was why there was no left mainstream media talk show. And then there was a discussion around the notion of hegemony and what hegemony actually meant. And it seemed that most people understood it sort of negatively and therefore something that should be resisted. But then, so there's some discussion whether you talk about a sort of counter-hegemony of the left or whether you can actually talk about a left hegemony. And it was pointed out that often resistance in terms of opting out of consumer culture or things like adbusters or setting up communal gardens or whatever is potentially appealing, but within capitalist society can often get some of this gets reinserted into the capitalist system through bureaucratization or through all the problems it creates in terms of, well, if you resist consumer culture, what does it mean for producers? What does it mean for those who are actually producing the goods that you don't want to buy any longer? Those were the kinds of things discussed there. Okay, I'm almost there. The next one was on race and identities and anti-globalization work in Canada and sweatshops and how you can... So this sort of combined race and identities in the anti-globalization movement, sweatshops and the feminization of labor, and anti-globalization work in Canada. 5 main points came out of that. Firstly, that capitalism produces uneven development. You need to recognize the different experiences of globalization in the different localities so that you can't generalize the experience of globalization across the world. It's problematic to characterize the anti-capitalist or anti-globalization movement as having begun in the 90s with the sort of mass mobilizations in Seattle and so on, because that's only when the workers in the North seemed to be losing their privilege, and that's when they started to act. But in fact, the movement against globalization has a much longer history in the South, which is less talked about, has not been taken up by the media, and so on. But it's important for anti-globalization activists to at least recognize that longer history. And then the same problem that was flagged in the morning, which is the summit-hopping character of a lot of the anti-globalization movement, which leads it to be dominated by certain groups who have more privilege in certain cases, tend to be white, middle class, and so on. So there's a need to be more self-critical about that movement. And the interesting suggestion was made that there's a need to start community-based resistance in the North and link it to the mass movements against globalization, so that, for instance, activists at York can try and actually make links within the Jane Finch community and do work there that links communities that are affected by globalization with sort of younger activists who are more involved with the anti-globalization work. Okay, and then we have the last discussion, which was on ecology. Environments and capitalist globalization. And there were two main points that came out of it, thanks to Greg's very succinct summary. So one was that there's been, in Canada, there's an inadequate link between the environmental movement and social justice and globalization work, so that there isn't really an environmental justice movement, and this needs to be built. And secondly, we need to think of ways to link concrete ecological struggles around water, for instance, or around clean air, and maybe make these links across countries or across borders. But that's something that the left needs to engage in. Okay, so thank you.